This station receives support from Raven Alaska, offering daily flights from Kenai to Anchorage. More information at ravenalaska.com or 800-866-8394. Raven Alaska, we call Alaska home.
Up next, we've got Adam Keel of Latitude 65 Degrees Brewing in Fairbanks, Alaska. Adam, how are you doing today, sir?
Oh, hi, Bill. I'm doing pretty darn good.
You guys are getting close, right? You actually got your brew house fired up?
Yep. Yeah, we've got that thing fired up. It's been all of, like, I think going into 2 weeks ago where we got it fired up, and we actually have two beers in the tanks right now. Was going to have a third, but there was a little bit of a snafu.
A little technical hitch.
Yeah. So I just decided to, instead of rush stuff with doing a prop, I just decided, like, well, you know, I'll just hold off. And no use rushing into something.
Describe your brew setup.
Well, we have an Alpha 3-vessel 20-barrel brew house with a dedicated mash tun, louder tun, and a boil kettle. And it's pretty sweet setup, I got to say, of all the brew houses I've worked with. It's pretty nice because we got a way, like, I can actually use my iPad to access some of the controls on it.
Oh, okay.
It's like, actually, right before you called, I was looking at the hot liquor tank. I was raising the temperature up on it, and I was able to just stop the circulation pump on it and, you know, see exactly where it's at. I'm like, oh, this is amazing.
Cool. Very cool. So what are the first two beers you brewed?
The first beer I brewed was a German-style Pilsner, and the second one was a Scottish ale.
Yeah, that setup sounds like it would be really good for your traditional German styles.
Oh,
with,
yeah.
With the lauter tun and everything, right?
Yeah, it was nice because I was able to do, like, you know, could have done a decoction if I wanted to, but that may be a little excessive for right now. Mm-hmm. I think I'll toy around with that a little later on, but did a full-on step mash, you know, up, it was like five different temp points we hit, so. And it didn't take too long either, so it was pretty nice.
Excellent. So I see online it looks like you're, like, hiring staff, right?
Yeah, it's been eating into some more of my time than brewing has
welcome,
lately at the moment.
Welcome to being a manager.
Yeah.
You'll find it's going to eat into even more of your time.
Yeah, it's like pretty much the entire day yesterday was spent interviewing people for taproom manager. And, you know, before that, it's wrangling all the resumes and everything we're getting in. And it's definitely needed, but certainly time consuming.
Well, if you don't mind, paint a little visual picture of your taproom.
Well, sure. So we're actually downstairs right now, painting the rafters right now because they're exposed wood rafters and putting a kind of this like an industrial gray up there. So it blends in a little bit better. And one side we did last week and it looks pretty cool. Definitely say I like it a lot more painted. But the bar itself, it's a pretty long bar we have in there. We'll have 2 to 3 terminals there for people to get beer from or, you know, do to-go fills. They'll have like a to-go fill station or where you could just buy merch or maybe like close out a tab kind of thing so you don't actually have to stand in line the same people that are getting beer. But also, the big thing is probably what people are more excited about is we're going to have 28 taps.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So 4 of them are going to be pretty much dedicated to non-alcoholic stuff. You know, we'll probably have maybe some Moose's Tooth root beer on and then kind of mess around with some stuff ourselves, have some cold brew nitro on tap, hopefully here. But then those other 24, we're looking to basically have flexibility with that. Looking to have at least 18 different things on, and then maybe double up some taps that are fast movers, so you know bartenders aren't bottlenecking at a particular tap that's a popular one. But also gives me the flexibility. It's like, I'm going to take a few of those for a couple other beers because I like doing a big variety of style, and I've seen it happen in the lower 48 a few years ago, or even really beyond that, where it's getting very IPA heavy on the taps.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to see that up here in Alaska a lot more and more. So I want to have that ability to have some other beers on as well, not leave, you know, I mean, it is a minority of people that are venturing into the, some of the classic styles, but I don't want to forget about those of us that still like to go out and, you know, have a Belgian style beer
have a Pilsner.
Yeah. Or, you know, like another German lager, like having more than one lager on at the same time. Cause you know, there's that residency time they take up for taking so much longer. I think we're on like day 12 of, fermentation for the lager, because I'm doing it a little colder than some people do, just to, I don't want to rush it. I kind of want to try to keep traditional with it. So, and it's going to be in the lagering tank until I feel like it's really ready. So having that option to just have some beers take a while, because that's I know it's a big driving force for a lot of breweries. It's like, well, IPAs, they really move and sell.
Yeah.
But I want to be okay with a tap being taken up for 3, 4, maybe even 5 months for, say, you know, some sort of German or Belgian beer or some, even a pale ale. I would hope a pale ale would not stick around that long.
I assume you've got a lot of cooler space to support all that.
Yes, it's, how big is that thing? I think it's close to 3,000 square feet.
Okay, yeah.
In there.
Yeah, that's
so
big.
Yeah, so we can get a fair amount of kegs in there. Like right now we have all of our kegs in there, and we certainly have room for more. And I'm really hoping that we can get that thing filled up here pretty soon.
Have you got any?
We're not too far off from actually turning the refrigerator on in there. So, got to get ready for those beers.
Exactly.
Have to actually start cleaning some kegs here soon.
Yeah. Have you got any plans to package besides spare kegs? Have you got accounts lined up? Are you planning just to sell strictly, you know, over the, out of your own tap room? Any?
Well, right now, the big focus is just on the tap room itself. You know, we talked about doing crowlers, especially with the COVID stuff happening. But, you know, we've had so many delays and some even unforeseen expenses with some fire suppression stuff. That's like, we kind of need to hold off on a crowler machine until after we open and have some positive cash flow going. So it really, it'll just be like growlers to go. We'll have a 32 and a 60-ounce glass growler format initially. And at some point, we'll try to get some growlers in as soon as we can. And we'll have some draft going out to some probably key accounts. I mean, we've certainly had plenty of interest around town and even down in Anchorage. So we'll send some out once we... we're ready to do that. We certainly don't want to run out of the tap room.
No, can't have that happen. Tap room, I can't remember. You guys have a kitchen as well?
No, you know, that's another question I probably get at least once a week as well, if we'll have food or not, but we will certainly be accommodating food trucks.
Right, yeah.
Depending, the goal would be to have one here every day if possible, and maybe even on the weekends having two here. We're also trying to look into having some options for some local restaurants that will deliver to the brewery. But something in maybe phase three of renovations on the building will involve some sort of food space in there, because we're planning to at least make room for a kitchen. We're not necessarily looking to, you know, run a restaurant ourselves, so it would probably be like bring in somebody who would want to lease the space and hopefully have it where we could have multiple, basically, tenants over there, like a, you know, like 2-3 different food vendors, basically, and hoping to give like a little space for like maybe food trucks wanting to take something to the next level while not necessarily losing their food truck opportunity.
Yeah. Kind of a transitional place. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we'll see how that plays out. You know, we'd like to do that sooner than later, but that will all be incumbent upon our popularity and success. So,
well, let's go to the $64,000 question now. When are you going to open your doors?
Well, in-house, we've been saying April 16th is our goal. And it seems like it had been one for a while. We did run into an issue with tiling in the bathrooms, and we thought we were going to have someone help with that, and then we've just ended up having to do it ourselves. So, you know, that April 16th timeline might end up being April 23rd, you know, which basically would be a month out now. So you would hope we would have a better handle on things, but we're still kind of taking it one day at a time. But
so sometimes we will
certainly try to hold to being open by the end of the month, regardless what happens.
That's what I hear you saying is sometime in April. So
yeah.
Okay.
So mid to late April.
Well, good. Yeah. The sooner the better, like you said, so you can start getting that positive cash flow action.
Yeah, exactly.
So you've got the two beers that you've got in the tanks right now. What other beers do you plan on having on when you open?
Well, of course, some IPAs. I'm wanting to hold off on the IPAs until the last kind of minute, so they'll be at their freshest.
Right.
You know, I don't necessarily want one sitting around for a month, you know. And but yeah, I think I'll be doing based on what I've got lined up, is kind of like a more of a classic double IPA. More West Coast-like, but then also, you know, the ubiquitous hazy New England IPA as well.
If you feel you must. I'm not a huge fan of the New England IPA, but once again, that's just, obviously, I'm in the minority based on the sales.
Yeah, they've certainly grown on me. I was very against them initially, but then it was really when Anchorage first brewed one with Monkish, that Lines release, and that was really the first one that really kind of clicked for me. I'm like, wow, you know, this can be a really good style of beer, because it did have that strong hop aroma and flavor without the palate-destroying bitterness that was so much the case in the IBU wars we were fighting, you know, the years prior. So it was a kind of nice departure. And it's been interesting to see what people have done with them. I mean, there's certainly some examples out there. I'm like, nah, I'll pass on those. But there are certain breweries that are really nailing that, you know, now ubiquitous style. But, you know, I try to have something for everybody here.
Yeah, well, I'm not faulting you on that. I personally, I like a lot of hop freshness and everything, but I don't really enjoy the juicy fruit aspect of it. I lean more towards the the piney, resiny, dank IPA or hops, as opposed to some of these ones we're making now that they have such so overwhelming tropical fruit character to them.
That's
just not to my taste.
Oh yeah, and I think sometimes lately when I see what some breweries are doing, I'm like, craft beer is going off the rails here with some of these styles. Because really, I mean, some of them, I mean, we're getting close to, like, we might as well be just making cider at this point. Hmm. Because it's gotten so fruity. Yeah. You know, and it's like you're adding so much like fruit puree and all that to that. I'm like, I mean, I would imagine like some are even bordering on whether you can legally call them beer anymore. But, and like the milkshake IPAs, some of those have gone, have certainly jumped the shark. And also like the pastry stouts, they're just become like pure, like liquefied desserts of nostalgic.
Well, the thing that always amazes me about beers, any of those kind of really wild beers, is could you imagine yourself having more than one of them?
Yeah. You might be able to choke down one,
but you're not. It's not like you're going to say, boy, that was good. Give me another one of those. So.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly becoming more novelties. Like, I could see some of those pastry stouts that I've tried. I'm like, this 16-ounce format is a little much. Maybe an 8-ounce format is more what needs. And I do love rich, you know, desserts and all that stuff, but... And sometimes it's fun as a brewer to do that in a beer, but seeing like that being a huge portion of what people are drinking now, it, you know, I guess it means I'm getting old and I'm like, oh, what happened to beer?
Yeah,
but
welcome to the club.
I still want to see some of those other styles out there. Like there's so many great styles that are frankly on the verge of dying because so many breweries are just chasing cash cows.
Yep. No, I hear you. We're both sitting on our porch yelling at the kids to get off our lawn. I know the feeling. but then again, like you say, you know, you look at these styles that have been around for hundreds of years and you think, well, wait a minute, how come we're not brewing more of those? There's a reason they've been around for centuries. They have something to offer, and I think they're a little tougher to brew than some of this newer stuff, which you just seems like, as you say, just keep throwing stuff in, you know, and then whatever you end up at the end, call it experimental and you can sell it. All righty. Well, hey, Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and good luck on getting your doors open in April. I'm sure everybody up there in Fairbanks is chomping at the bit.
Oh, yeah. That's the biggest thing I get asked all the time among people that know me and don't know me alike. So people are just as anxious as we are.
All righty. Well, hey, good luck. And hopefully once this COVID stuff releases, I can make a trek up there to Fairbanks and check you guys out. Or one day we'll see you down here at some of our beer festivals or something.
Yeah, I look forward to venturing out into the lower part of the state once hopefully we get back to normal here soon.
Hey, job hunters. Are you looking for employment? Kenai Peninsula Workforce can help. It's a new website put out by the Kenai Peninsula Economic Development District to help applicants be qualified for jobs and careers with Peninsula-based companies. Find training programs, access scholarships, get help with your resume, and more. Find a link to Kenai Peninsula Workforce through kped.org.
It may technically be spring here on the last frontier, but it still seems mighty cold outside. This time of year, I seem to spend a bit more time thinking about temperatures than I do at other times of year. So it occurred to me that perhaps I should say a few words about the proper serving temperature for beers. If Super Bowl ads, bar signs, and country songs are to be believed, Americans love their beer ice cold. After all, you can't very well have a summertime backyard barbecue without an ice-filled cooler of long-neck bottles and cans, can you? And beer always tastes best in a frosty mug, right? Well, yes and no. If your predilections lean toward mass-produced lagers with the word light somewhere in the name, then yes, you definitely want to keep those things as cold as the laws of thermodynamics will permit. Try drinking one at room temperature and you'll quickly see why. But when it comes to craft ales and lagers, there really is no good one-size-fits-all temperature. And even if there were, it probably wouldn't be ice cold. Temperature has a profound effect on our taste buds. The chemical compounds that are responsible for the myriad aromas and flavors we love in our beer are variously activated and suppressed according to temperature. Warmth usually makes a flavor more perceptible, while cold tends to suppress it. Choosing just the right temperature ensures that these constituent chemicals remain properly in balance as you enjoy your craft beer. Take sweetness, for example. In a 2005 article in the journal Nature, researchers identified how chemical pathways in the tongue's taste receptors vary with temperature. The upshot of the study is that increasing the temperature of a food or beverage strengthens the electrical signals that tell the brain what you're tasting. But some kinds of taste respond differently than others, which is why an ice-cold stout is likely to taste harshly bitter when a somewhat warmer sample expresses a balance between malt sweetness and roast bitterness. You intuitively know this. There's a reason we enjoy our coffee hot, our red wine at room temperature, and our white wine cold. And the same is true for beer. Different styles of beer taste better to most people at different temperatures. Here are some general guidelines. 35 to 40 degrees Fahrenheit, mass market light lagers, think Coors or Bud Light. 40 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit, Czech and German Pilsners, Munich Hells, wheat beers, and Kolsch, craft lagers in general. 45 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, IPAs, American Pale Ales, Porters, and most stouts. 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit, Belgian ales, sour ales, Bock, English bitters and milds, Scottish ales. 55 to 60 degrees Fahrenheit, barley wines, imperial stouts, Belgian strong ales, and Doppelbocks. When in doubt, remember this rule of thumb. A light body and low alcohol beer tastes better cold, while full body and higher alcohol examples are better warmer. Unless you're an even bigger beer geek than me, it's unlikely you'll be able to devote different refrigerators to different styles. I've got a beer refrigerator and I keep it set at 45 degrees Fahrenheit, which is a bit cold for some styles. You may have to keep yours in your main fridge alongside the eggs and butter down below 35 degrees Fahrenheit. If so, the easiest thing to do to enjoy a pint at its best is to pour your beer into a clean glass and let it warm up a bit before drinking. That's what I do for styles that are best in the 50 to 60 degree range. Finally, after taking the preceding advice into consideration, don't ever let anyone tell you that the way you drink your beer is wrong. If you prefer your malt liquor warm and your imperial stout ice cold, please go ahead. To paraphrase Voltaire, I may disapprove of the way you drink your beer, but I will defend to the death your right to drink it that way. Now, let's talk about hard seltzer. Personally, I'd hoped I'd never find myself writing about hard seltzers. Maybe I'm just a curmudgeon yelling at the kids to get off my lawn, but hard seltzers just aren't what I think of as beer. Still, they have become incredibly popular to the point where even craft brewers like our very own Kenai River Brewing and Alaskan Brewing have jumped on the bandwagon, so I've decided I should at least say a few words about them. Seltzers may seem to have appeared out of nowhere, but they actually represent the latest incarnation in a line of alcoholic beverages that dates back to 1981, when Ernest and Julio Gallo released the first Bartles and James wine cooler. Since then, we've seen the lemon-lime Zima from Coors in 1991, followed by Mike's Hard Lemonade in 1999. After that, market shelves saw various hard root beers and hard iced teas until 2016 when White Claw, the first and biggest alcoholic seltzer, hit the market. After 5 years, it appears hard seltzers are here to stay, at least until the next big thing comes along. Seltzers as a name for the style is a fairly accurate one, since they are usually lightly sweetened, but at a far lower rate than your typical soda, on the order of something like 0 to 5 carbs per 12-ounce serving. While some seltzers are produced using at least some brewing ingredients, most are not. In practice, seltzer production is not terribly complex or expensive. Typically, a brewery making a hard seltzer will make up a strong batch of sugar water, add a ton of yeast nutrient to compensate for the fact that no malted barley was used, and then ferment it. Of course, as I've talked about many times in the past, fermentation adds many flavors to the finished product. But for hard seltzers, these yeast-produced flavors are about the last thing you want. Instead, you're trying to produce a blank alcoholic slate to which you can add whatever flavor profile you want. So the result of the fermentation process is usually filtered using both standard and carbon filtration to strip away any and all remaining color or flavor components. What's left is then diluted with pure water to the desired alcoholic strength. As you can imagine, it's pretty insipid stuff at this point, but it's now the perfect blank slate for adding whatever artificial flavors you are shooting for. I could go on in great detail about the scientific challenges to producing the fruit flavors found in seltzers, but that is really beyond the scope of what I'm trying to do here. Let me just make a key point. Unlike most fruit beers you will find on store shelves, fruit-flavored seltzers are not made by the addition of fruit or even fruit extracts. Because of the stripped-down nature of seltzer, they get their fruit flavor via artificial means. What am I talking about? Let me give you an example. In my high school chemistry class, we once made the chemical ester that makes bananas smell like bananas. I don't remember all the details, but we tossed several different chemicals together in a beaker, and then suddenly the beaker full of chemicals smelled like a ripe banana. On a much grander scale, this is how seltzers get their flavor. The formula for a particular fruit flavor, for example strawberries, can be extremely complex, with more than 50 different chemical compounds mixed together to create it. Adding that to flavor a seltzer is a far cry from Zach Henry at St. Elias Brewing Company adding several pounds of raspberries to a batch of Kolsch beer to create his very popular Island Girl, at least in my humble opinion. If all this sounds like I'm getting a little down on hard seltzers, maybe I am. From a healthier alcoholic drink standpoint, I guess they have something to offer, though personally, I don't drink beer because it's healthy, but because I like it. If hard seltzers are what you like, then go ahead and enjoy them, at least until the next big thing comes along to replace them. As for me, I'll stick to beer. Well, that's it for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier. I hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll be back next month. Our final thought this month comes from Frederick the Great, King of Prussia. Many battles have been fought and won by soldiers nourished on beer. With that happy thought, until next month, cheers. Might be the one.